Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On Air with Russell of Hotels, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to On Air with Russell of Hotels, where we talk about everything hospitality, from hotels to influencers and everything in between. We will feature guest interviews with hospitality professionals who will share their experiences. Your host, Russell Edmond, has spent over 25 years in the hospitality industry, beginning his career with Marriott International in hotel operations, before moving into the sales arena and becoming a relationship building director of sales and marketing. Russell then went to the other side as a hospitality entrepreneur. He now consults in the hotel and meeting space, which includes being the CEO of Russell of Hotels Group. Did I mention he was a veggie foodie? Yes, Russell is always looking for good non-meat eats. Please welcome your host, Russell Edmond.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining On Air with Russell Hotels. High on top, fourth floor in the studios of LA Talk Radio. We're in Sherman Oaks. Guess what? I have a guest today. Guess who it is? Jeanette Seha, travel expert, travel extraordinaire. You're more than welcome. We're gonna get into it with Jeanette in a couple of minutes. Maybe a couple minutes. But I wanted to, catch you up on some weekly industry news. Like I always want to keep you guys abreast of what's going on in the industry. You may already know this stuff, but whatever. It's my show, so I'm gonna go ahead and share it with you anyway. So there you go. Industry news. And this one caught me by surprise, okay? American consumers in 2018 spent more on Airbnb than Hilton hotels. Can you believe that? Is Airbnb that big now that it's taking over basically 20% of the market?
Wow.
If it's doing more business than Hilton.com or Hilton International, I mean, that's crazy. So, and, Airbnb is valued at about $38 billion, so it is what it is, right? So there you go. And I have been talking about, how hotel companies need to be looking out for not just Airbnb, but like Google and what's the other one? Amazon.com. Those are the two it needs to be worried about as well. But Airbnb is actually taking a strong foothold of, so they moved past Hilton. So that means Marriott's next. So look out, Marriott. That's all I have to say. Equinox. You guys familiar with Equinox?
Yes.
You get your workout on?
A really expensive gym.
Yeah, exactly. Well, guess what? They opened up their first hotel in Hudson Yards, New York.
Wow.
A 212 rooms designed as the ultimate sleep chamber. I guess you go there and get some really good sleep, I guess, which features a total soundproofing of the rooms, blackout window systems, holistic and holistic philosophy and emphasis on personalization. So you go there, I guess you make your reservations, you go there and whatever you ask for, you're going to get, or maybe they have enough data on you where they know what you want. So remember, we've been talking about personalization and things like that, knowing your guests and things like that. So Equinox or whatever is taking that a step further. So they open up their first hotel. Disney World, getting rid of their smoking sections or smoking areas. So I thought they'd done that already, but obviously not. So they're getting rid of smoking sections as well as stroller sizes. So I guess people come in there with these big, huge strollers or whatever. Well, you got to have a minimum, it's 38 inches wide and 52 inches long.
Wow.
Whatever the heck that is. So you can't come in there with the double strollers and all that kind of stuff. But those are just some things. And just so you know, Disneyland, it costs $97 per adult. Then that's on a value day. Okay. Then you go to regular days, it's $110 per adult. And then you go to peak days, that's $124.
Wow. What about for California residents? Do we get a discount?
No. Oh, okay. Well, the publication that I had did not mention that. Oh, but I think you get the option of, I mean, there's some California, there's some days just for residents that you get some type of, and it may be that maybe that's the value day, the $97. But you do get the option to buy a annual pass, and it's probably, I don't know if it probably comes out cheaper than that or not. I'm not sure. I haven't been to Disneyland in years, so please don't ask me about
I just to piggyback on that, Russell, before you go, I heard a rumor that if you give birth at Disneyland, then your baby will get entrance for free for life. I heard that. That's probably a rumor, though.
We'll have to check that out.
Yeah, that would be interesting to see if that's still. Because if so, when I am 8.5 months pregnant, you better believe I'm going to be at Disneyland every day.
That's a good one. Okay, so all you...
You're welcome, future baby. Yes.
All you mothers-to-be, go to Disneyland. You
just
know,
a rumor. And, I don't know. And, I don't know.
Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? But, all right, moving right along. Contact information. You want to get a hold of me, Russell at RussellofHotels.com. I'm on Twitter, IG, LinkedIn, Facebook, at Russell of Hotels as well. LinkedIn is Russell L. Edmond. And then, you know, I have two Facebook pages, Russell of Hotels and Russell L. Edmond. And I have a website, RussellofHotels.com. And after the show, we go on podcasts. So we go on iTunes, Apple Play, or Google Play, or wherever your favorite podcast platform happens to be. I want to get into the interview, so I'm going to bypass some of this stuff because Jeanette just has just so much going on. And for her to even take time out of her busy schedule to be here, I really appreciate it. I've known her for a couple of years. But anyway, we're going to get into that. But I do want to thank my last week's guest, and that was Kalahari Arapatu, Director of Restaurant Operations, which includes the Runway Restaurant, where beauty meets flavor. That's at the Hilton Woodland Hills. Just so you know. But thank you, Kalahari, for that. And thank you for introducing me to a couple of your colleagues, Chef Jack, Babette Shade, who's the Director of Catering, Executive Chef Jack, of course, and then the General Manager, who is Mr. Michael Wilding. So it's a pleasure to meet all three of you. And I did meet another gentleman, too. I think he goes by Vincent Viote. His real name is Joseph, but I think he told me he goes by Vince or Vincent, something like that. But anyway, thank you guys for that. Intro today's guest. She's a travel journalist. She's an award-winning travel and TV host. One of the top 20 global women of excellence. She's bilingual. She's a travel expert. She's a major influencer in the travel space. Now, she doesn't think she's an influencer, but I do, and I think the rest of the world does too. She's a highly sought after speaker. She's visited over 20 countries to count. I don't know, maybe 53 now. See, I'm down. Counting. I didn't do my homework. It's okay. She's my friend, and now she's my guest. Aww. Without further ado, Miss Jeanette Seha, welcome to the On Air with Russell of Hotel Show.
Thank you, Russell. And hello, everybody. I'm honored to be here. And I'm honored to know this fabulous guy over here, Russell, who is just doing extraordinary things and is just one of the most kind people that I know in Los Angeles and just everywhere. And this is why it's my pleasure to be here. And he's just like, his show is just going to keep taking off. And he's just, I'm so happy for you.
Well, thank you so much. And people are like, who are they talking about? Not the Russell I know.
Oh. Anyway,
okay, let's get into it. You know, I have a list of questions to ask you. Okay, what was your last trip?
My last trip was Nashville. I was in Nashville visiting family, taking care of my mom who fell and had an injury, and I was taking care of her. And then prior to that was Chicago for the awards.
Okay, and what was that?
It was It was on International Women's Day, and so I was nominated as a woman of excellence. And I was by Congress, and Congressman Danny Davis personally gave us these awards and signed them. And we had a round table with women from all over the world. And these women are just phenomenal in their industries. Like, you have one that was, you know, a doctor who now is fighting against human sex trafficking and dedicated her whole life to that. And there's another woman who is a professor at Harvard, and also she opened 4 clinics. Like, these women are just beyond. I'm like, what am I doing here? Oh my God, you guys are amazing. But these women were just, they are phenomenal. Indonesia, representing all different nations, and I was just truly humbled and honored to have been there. So, been
wow. part of it. Well, you're doing some good things in your own right,
Thank
too.
Thank you.
I mean, when I met you 2 years ago, you were telling me about things that you wanted to do.
Did
and
I?
And then all of a sudden, it just blew up. I mean, you're like everywhere. I mean, you're like, I'm going to India. I'm going here. I'm going there. I'm like, what the heck? I mean, you've been, in the last 2 years, you've probably been to, 20 countries, 30 countries?
Probably.
Yeah.
At least.
So, I mean, whatever you're doing it right. So continue that. But you're a travel journalist. So tell me about your journey to becoming a travel journalist.
Sure. And this is something I love to share my story. I knew since I was 6 years old, watching TV programs like, Samantha Brown or Anthony Bourdain and Rick Steves on every channel, like Travel Channel, Discovery Channel, History Channel. I'm a sponge for information, and I'm a forever student. So I would be glued to the TV after school, and I would tell my mom, I want to be her, like Samantha Brown. I would point to her and be like, Mom, I want to be her when I grow up. She'd be like, yeah, that's cute. Okay. And like go like, help my brother with his homework or whatever she was doing. But I was like, no, I'm going to be her. I'm going to do that. But also like, and to this day, Samantha Brown is still doing shows. She has a show on PBS called Places to Love. And she's just amazing. She's just a trailblazer and someone who's a prime example of a woman who has family. She has twins, and she has a young family and her husband, that you can travel with family as well. Like, even when you have a family, you can travel. And also, when I was watching her at 6 years old, going back to the story, I would watch her and I would say, I'm going to do that. But also subconsciously at the time, I didn't see anyone that looked like me that was doing that. So I thought that I had to be like blonde or look a certain way. So for a couple of years after, I think no one told me that, but it was just in my mind that I was like, oh, maybe, I can't because I don't look like anyone out there doing it. And so I kind of suppressed my dreams myself, which was like self-sabotage. Mm. But, we don't know what you don't know, right? And then I'll backtrack to when I was like 12 years old, where I would watch Oprah with my mom and everyone after school. And I would be like, I want to be like Oprah, because Oprah is just such another phenomenal woman who lets people share their stories. And she built a platform of inspiration. And she's one of my biggest. If I saw Oprah, I would just faint or something. I don't know what I would say. But so what I would do when I was 12 and I would start going to school is read the newspaper every single day. I mean, there was no internet. And if there was, it was like AOL, dial-in, like super slow. There was no social media. So for me, I would just read the newspaper every day. And then I would reshare the information to my family at the dinner table. And so I was kind of doing like an anchor woman thing, a reporter. I just want to share information with people. So hopefully it will help them in some way, shape or form. And then that's when I realized that journalism was a career that I could pursue after high school, because it involved me learning and interviewing and then sharing people's stories and hopefully being, that can help people. So that's why I did journalism. And when I went to college in Nashville, Belmont University, I walked in on day one as a freshman to the dean at the time of journalism. And I said, I want to be a travel journalist. No one even told me if that was a thing or not. I just put the two together. And I was like, I want to report about the world. How do I do that? And thankfully, he was a travel editor at the Tennessean, at the newspaper at the time. So he was the perfect person, mentor, professor to guide me during my college years. And he was one of my biggest cheerleaders up until he passed away over a year ago. Mm. And I even spoke to one of his journalism classes. And, you know, he said, you know, from day one, you knew exactly, you came into my office. You said, this is what I want to do. What do I need to do? And he was like, I'm so proud of you. And yeah, so basically, it's always been in me. Mm. And, you know, I kind of dabbled after college. I did internships. I did four internships, two at a TV station, news stations. One of them was the local CBS where Oprah got one of her first reporting gigs. Because okay. For some people who may not know Oprah's history, she went to TSU, okay. Tennessee State University. And so she has some history in Nashville. And then she did one of her reporting gigs at the CBS in Nashville. And you would think they would have like a shrine and a wall dedicated to her. But when I went for my internship, I didn't see anything. And I was like, I would have like the whole wall dedicated to her. But I digress. So so I did news internships, but every time I was in a news environment where I had to go with reporters and follow them to their stories, I was like, I would cringe because I don't want to be the messenger of bad news. Mm-hmm. I want to be the messenger of good news. And when I traveled, I would always see good happening, but nobody was reporting on it to what I saw. Like, for example, when I would go to Mexico City to visit my grandparents and family, I would see so many amazing stories of local business owners, of families, of somebody who, you know, learned how to walk again, or just after an accident, or people, philanthropy, people, like so many brilliant stories. And I was like, why is no one talking about this, right? And if you turn on the news, unfortunately, sometimes people would hear only the negative, mm-hmm. like what would happen in, let's say, Mexico. And it would just, that really just made me sad because it's not the reality. It's not everything. I felt like there needs to be a balance between, yes, we need the news and I'm 100%, we need to know what's going on, but we need to know what else is happening in the world because there is so much good as well. And I just feel like some cultures or countries can get a bad rep or stereotype just on what the news reports. And it's universal. I mean, the U.S. gets it too. Like when I go abroad and
they talk about
the States. The yeah. And then sometimes it's, and they don't know what they don't know. So if that's all they see on the news, then that's all they think. So I just want to change the narrative and highlight what's good is going on.
Very good. Very good. Now, the college you went to in Nashville was what's it called again?
Belmont University.
Belmont University.
Bruins.
Now how? And you're from Southern California, correct?
I am originally from Orange County. My okay. parents came in the '80s with the low immigration wave, and my brother and I were born here.
Okay.
And my sister was born in Mexico, but she was like a few months older.
So was your family already going to Nashville, or you were the first one to go out there?
Yeah. So funny story, how that all happened. What had happened was my uncle opened a Mexican restaurant in Nashville. Okay. It was a hole in the wall.
Was that the first Mexican restaurant in Nashville?
Probably. Honestly, it was one of the strongest ones, and it's still there to this day. It's called La Hacienda Taqueria, and it was a hole in the wall, and it grew, and my father went to like help, and ever since then he said, you know what, I think the cost of living here is great, the public school system's great, you know, I mean, and this was like 20 years ago. Now Nashville's become an emerging place to be. Mm. A lot of transplants, a lot of, I think Amazon's going there, Nissan headquarters moved there, so now it's the place, celebrities are going there, but at that time it wasn't what it is today, and so we moved. Okay. Yeah, so that was when I was like around 12, 13.
Okay.
So I have, you know, Nashville and Franklin and Tennessee has a, you know, special place in my heart. And so every time I go back there, it's really refreshing and nice.
Cool. Very good. Now, okay, so you left Nashville. Your first job was in?
News.
Okay, so when you left, let's say you left Nashville. So the whole travel journalist. What was your first job being a travel journalist?
Well, let me even go back, Russell. Mm-hmm. When I was 12, I started writing about travel in a journal. So I did my first travel journal when I was 12 years old, but okay. I didn't make it, you know, publish it, or mm-hmm. I just wrote about every time I traveled. So I've been technically writing about travel for 19 years.
Wow.
But right after Belmont, I did work for the Tennessean, so mm-hmm. the paper. And then I got my first job offer was to be a local news reporter in Fargo, North Dakota. And I turned that one down.
Really?
No offense to North Dakota or anything. I just...
That's been on top of my list.
Yeah. I just... I wanted to be back in California. So I moved to California. Then I did a paid internship, PR internship. Then I got a part-time job at Fox Sports. Then I took night classes for UCLA's professional producing program with the intent to be a host and a producer for a travel show.
Okay.
So I like the producing side of you know, television or programming too.
Very good.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to jump around here.
Totally.
Now, you met Anthony Bourdain.
Yes.
I mean, Anthony Bourdain is one of my favorite people as far as travel and food ever. So, I mean, a great loss, but I mean, you actually met him.
Yes. And how that happened was, I wouldn't say luck, because I really believe, and we have made discussed this before, that I think luck is when hard work meets opportunity. Mm-hmm. I think Oprah and others have said it like that. But I've been such a fan of Anthony Bourdain too. I mean, he's just was an extraordinary person, and he was just very raw. He was who he was, mm-hmm. and if you liked it, great, and if not, great. Backtrack. Yeah, that happened a couple years ago. I found out he was going to be a producer on a film called Jeremiah Latorre. It was on a chef, and he was going to be premiering it at the Tribeca Film Festival. So when I saw that, I was like, Anthony Bourdain never does red carpets. Anthony Bourdain doesn't do, as far as I knew, he didn't do like interviews and red carpets. And I saw that he was going to do red carpet, and he was going to do Q&A after the screening, the premiere at Tribeca. And so light bulbs were going off in my mind. I was like, I have to go. I have to be there. So I just pitched the idea to several publications. And I was like, hey, Anthony Bourdain's going to be here. I would love to interview him if you need for your publication, yada, yada. I got 9 no's. I was like, what? People, do you guys understand? He does not do red carpets mm-hmm. and interviews. I knew this. And I was like flabbergasted. So what I ended up doing was I was like, fine. I'm going to go. I'm going to get my own plane ticket. I'm going to buy my own ticket to watch the screening. And I'll just ask him questions during the Q&A. And I'll just stand outside the red carpet. That's how determined I was. I was like, fine. The day I said that, I got a yes from a publication. Like, the day I said that, I was like, so either way, though, that was my mindset. If you really want something, you'll find a way, mm-hmm. right? Like yep. Jim Rohn would say. Or if not, you'll find an excuse. So after the first no, I could be like, okay. After the 9th no, I could be like, okay, well, it's not. No, it's like, fine, I'm going to go myself. Well, what? You know, that's the mindset. And so that's how that opportunity happened. So I did get the press pass to get on the red carpet with all these reporters. And I was, when he arrived on the red carpet, first he did the photographers. Then he did the interviews, and then he did like a video, and then he went to the screening. I could not, and I don't get starstruck. I mean, you know this, Russell. Like, by the way, we saw Magic Johnson when having coffee.
That's right.
in
Beverly Hills.
In Beverly Hills, we were having coffee, and we saw Magic Johnson. So we see celebrities all the time. You're just so used to it here in LA. And it's no big deal. Like, I don't get starstruck. But Anthony Bourdain, I literally was, like, hyperventilating. I couldn't breathe. I was like, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh. I mean, I thought he was so attractive, like, good-looking first, you know, which he had 3 generations of women in my family who thought he was so attractive. My mother, my sister, me, and my niece, who was in high school at the time. So, like, I mean, and people think, well, he doesn't, like, it's not even about his physical. It's his attitude. It's his personality. It makes him attractive. Anyway, he got on the red carpet, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's so hot. Oh my gosh, I'm so nervous. Oh my gosh, it's like meeting one of your idols. And all the reporters next to me were like from New York, and they're like, do you want to go before us? Like, you look really nervous. And I was like, yes, I just need to do it and get over it. And And so I did, and he was so tall. I mean, I don't know how tall he was, but he was so tall, and he was so nice. You know, sometimes people get, like, sad when they meet an idol because it may not be, like, mm-hmm. what they think. He went beyond amazing. So nice. He even, like, bent down a little to talk to me when I was interviewing, and he was like, my heart was pumping out of my chest. I was like, oh, my, I forgot what my name was. I forgot, like, I was like, oh, my gosh. I probably looked like the biggest, I don't know, dork or whatever. And I asked him, he was on limited time because he had like 50 other reporters to talk to. So his publicist was like, okay, you have like, 2 minutes or something. I was like, okay, let me just, and I asked him several questions. And then towards the end, I was like, I just want to say how much I'm a huge fan of yours, like beyond a fan. Like, you literally transformed my life to want to be in the travel industry because of someone like you. I want to help, and I want to, share that with the world too. And he was so humbled and so nice. And it, to this day, it's one of the highlights of my career, but life. Mm-hmm. And when I found out he passed, I was just waking up, and all my friends on the East Coast were already texting me, and, they knew how much he meant to me. Even though I only met him once, he meant so much to me. So I was literally gutted. I stayed home from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. in my bed just crying. And I just was like, there's never going to be anyone else like him. And then when you find out the details of how he passed, and then it was just even more added to the sadness, mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Then let's go to another. Okay. All right. You don't consider yourself an influencer. Why not?
Well, there's, I think...
Is there a negative thing with being an influencer?
No. I think there's just different interpretations of an influencer. I think in the sense as of social media influencer, I think that that's being really saturated right now, the word.
Yeah.
But I do feel that I just learned this. I was on a panel actually last week in LA about, we spoke exactly about this, influencer being, but what I learned was I'm a thought leader. So, for example, I think there is a difference between being an influencer and an influential person and or a thought leader. An influencer, I think, is great. But like I said, I just feel with social media, it's getting this negative connotation to it because there's so many influencers that how do you know? And what does it mean? And, does it mean all the numbers and followers you have, or does it mean what you're doing? So in my opinion, I feel like being an influential person or a thought leader is what you're doing on the daily and what you're doing to serve others and to hopefully inspire and empower them doesn't mean like how many followers you have on a platform. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean, like, for me, like, you'll never see like not anymore. You won't see like me in a bikini and like doing 1,000 selfies, which is something I think about when I think of the word influencer nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. Which may not be true either, but that's what I mean. That's why I'm like,
I got you.
It's just an opinion, and I just feel, and for example, for me too, I think long-term, they're not necessarily short-term. So I've gotten some offers for social media to post or do sponsored ads, for example, and they weren't aligned to who I am or they didn't resonate with me. It could have been something completely like random, like a lighting company, which was great, but
it doesn't align
with me. And so I turned many offers down. And short term, people may say, oh, that's crazy. What? No, but I'm not thinking short term, I'm thinking long term, right?
That's good. So that's okay for me.
That's what
I like that answer. Okay. I'm thought leader. Okay.
Thought
I'm
use leader. That one. Yeah. I'm well, I learned one. It at Ruth Klein's event because she's just a phenomenal woman as well.
Branding is ultimate law of attraction.
Yeah. That's what Ruth Klein, that's what she said, at her event where I was on that panel.
Okay. Can you explain that one?
Well, you know me. I'm a huge believer in law of attraction in general. And I feel people who don't know me, I do vision boards and I do...
Let me back up, back up. Vision board.
Okay? Yes.
I did my first vision board last year. Yay. And the only reason I did it was because of this lady here. Okay. she was on social media talking about it and doing one. And she was having classes. You were doing classes.
Workshops with
mm-hmm. doing a vision board. I'm like, well, it worked for her. I mean, she's been traveling 30 countries in the last year. So I said, you know what? Let me just put some things. And one of the things I put on was this radio show.
What?
In fact, it was at the top.
Amazing.
So I can take that one off and put something else on there now. So
amazing.
But, so thank you.
My pleasure. And this is something that I've been doing vision boards, going back to Law of Attraction, for almost 5 years now.
Okay.
And I discovered vision boards and Law of Attraction through that movie, The Secret.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read the book. And then I started, you know, realizing that a lot of other successful entrepreneurs and people in general were reading and talking about the Law of Attraction. And I really got into it. And the thing that really changed for me was focusing on what I want instead of what I don't want, right? Because wherever your focus goes, you know, it grows. And, I started to realize how important the mindset is, how important, just as important as your skill set is the mindset. Because if I believe I can do anything, even if I don't physically see it, then I will find a way. And one of the many things that I did put on my vision board was travel. And, for example, I put India on there. And I'm not kidding, 2 months after, I got personally invited to India. And it was better than I could have believed, because it was, you know, by the tourism board for India, who wanted me to go as one of the few it was a first of their kind of conference.
Mm.
So I was a special guest, and I was just floored, because it was even better than I could have imagined. So vision boards for me is a tool to visualize and to manifest your goals, whether they're micro or macro, like no matter how big. Some people don't go big because they're like, well, I could put a coffee cup here and I can manifest that, but I can't manifest, you know, blah, 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 etc. But the great thing, once I started learning about Law of Attraction, is it doesn't care what you say or put, because you're working with a subconscious mind, and the subconscious mind will believe whatever you tell it, whether it's real or fantasy. Mm-hmm. And that's why affirmations are very powerful too. I mean, these are all things that I was discovering and reading and learning, and you could YouTube, Bob Proctor has been talking about Law of Attraction since the 80s. And he was on The Secret too. Abraham Hicks, Rhonda Byrne, who wrote The Secret book and did the documentary. I mean, there's so many people. John Assaraf, who did Vision Board, Jack Canfield, mm-hmm. you know, all of these amazing people that have used Law of Attraction successfully. But yet, you know, it's not 100% like you'll do it and it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
But it does help with you manifesting. And it's not just putting an image or affirmation and then be like, okay, it'll come. You got to do the work, meaning you got to do visualization techniques. You got to look at it.
Exactly.
You got to imagine it, at least for Abraham Hicks says 16, 17 seconds to create momentum in your mind and your brain. And then you let go of how it can happen.
Mm.
You detach. So those certain ways to work with Law of Attraction, and then, you know, just let it come to you. And then it's really amazing how you start to attract people, places, and things that are in your, you know, in your dreams or in your what you're trying to manifest.
I have to agree, because I've never done a radio show before, right? Never hosted one. I've been on one before as a guest. And, you know, it's one thing to get the show, but it's another thing you have to come up with content.
Sure.
And things like that. And what's the format of it? So it's, yeah, you may get something, but you still have to work at it to make sure it is viable and that you keep it and people want to listen to it or whatever the heck it is. So I actually, yeah, I do more work than I thought I would on it. Because, you know, I come up with questions and that questions have to be, you know, for you. They're just not general questions. So for each guest, I come with a totally different set of questions.
Great.
And if we get to them, we get to them. If we don't, we don't.
But, right.
But you had mentioned something, and when you're just talking about your vision board, going to India.
Yes.
Okay. And the tourism board asked you to come. Now, how did that happen?
Well, it's funny because a lot of the things that have been happening in the past 2 or 3 years in my personal and professional life have really been seeds that have been planted for years. Mm-hmm. For example, if someone were just to meet me today, they would be like, oh my gosh, everything's happening for you. You're so successful and this and that. But what people don't understand is A, my journey, to the daily work, meaning the mindset work, the visualization work, the vision boards. And also the third thing is the seeds that I've been planting for years, meaning the relationships, mm-hmm. right? For example, we met 2 or so years ago and I'm on your radio show. It didn't happen the day we met or the exactly. day after. It happened 2 years later. Mm-hmm. Same thing with India. I spoke on a panel in a conference for tourism in Romania.
Wow.
1 year before that opportunity okay. to India happened. And what had happened was 2 officials from India were at that conference in Romania happened to be in the audience, and then they lined up to speak with me after, and they were like, oh, we'd love to see you in India, and you know how they say, oh, here's my business card, you know, if you need anything, but you talk to so many people, exactly. and luckily, and I'm so grateful that he kept up with me, one of the officials in India, and he's just a phenomenal person, does yoga, he's into travel, tourism, he speaks, he's amazing. So he had been keeping up with me for over a year since then. And it was just this opportunity where he's like, you have to come to this. So, I had to be approved by a certain kind of board, like a board. And I had to go through a process. I had to fill an application. I had to send like all my work. I had to do a lot of stuff. It wasn't just, okay, let's come. Like, I had to show them like why I was good to be there, like why I was worthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me though, I didn't even know that conference was going to happen. But that's how that happened. So it really truly started from 1 year prior.
Wow, very good. Now, okay, so let's backtrack to Romania.
Yes.
How'd you get? I remember when you were going to Romania, I believe, and you're just like, I think you're supposed to maybe meet or something, like, oh, I'm going to Romania. You know, just like, I'm going to Van Nuys.
Right, exactly. Well, how Romania happened was amazing, too. Romania, I was nominated as a speaker, and I didn't even know Romania was going to have this conference. Again, I think it's from one of our mutual friends, Kat.
Okay.
And somebody else, I think, sent a recommendation.
Kat was on our show.
Kat is amazing.
I think she was my second or third guest. Kat Von B.
Anyway, yeah.
Go ahead. The Traveling Greek.
Yes. There you go. She's a phenomenal woman. And I think she and another person submitted or recommended when they were looking for a speaker. And they were like, oh, well, we need to see who this girl is. So then they contacted me, and then that's how Romania happened.
Wow.
So here's my takeaway from all of this. And when I look back at the experiences and the things that have happened, even to this day, mm-hmm. is if you are in alignment with your why for whatever it is that you're trying to do, like, for example, my career, my why is so much bigger than myself, right? It's intrinsic. I never, had the desire, like, I'm going to be so famous and I'm going to be a millionaire and I'm going to be like, blah, blah. There's nothing wrong with that, but that's not my why. Like, I don't do it to be famous or to be like rich or to do this, all this. I genuinely and with so much passion and purpose want everyone to travel. And the reason why is because I feel like it will unite humanity. It will break stereotypes, it will reduce bigotry, and it will unite people, because then when they go to a country that, let's say, they've only heard negative things about, they'll be like, you know what, actually this country is nothing like what I imagine, or nothing like the news, or nothing like, granted, there's danger in every country, I'm not denying that, but more than likely you can go to pretty much every country in the world except a few, and you'll be fine with proper research, due diligence, be mindful of the culture, and you're just a responsible person in general. I mean, you can get a lot of trouble here in LA by just being irresponsible in your city. So it's just to help people travel, inspire them, empower them, be a positive role model, especially for women.
Mm-hmm. Because now, you travel a lot by yourself.
I do. I travel so much by myself. And you know, it's not scary to me because I'm just so comfortable with myself, maybe too comfortable. Like, you know what I mean? Like a Friday night drinking wine and pizza and work and reading a book is like perfect for me, you know? But to some people that may not, but I do travel alone and a lot as a woman. And I feel that's very empowering for me and hopefully for other women, because there is that fear of physical safety, which is also valid. However, again, you know, you just be cautious wherever you go, be mindful. And I really feel you can travel alone as a woman, right? I mean, I've done it so many times, and knock on wood, I am just in perfect shape. Nothing has happened to me, knock on wood. And sometimes my family will be like, we don't get it. We don't get how you travel like all over the world by yourself and nothing, not saying they want anything bad to happen to me, but because they know me in real life that I can be kind of ditzy. I forget my wallet everywhere.
Why don't you tell the story about the, you shared with me a while back, Spain, you went to for the World Cup, right?
Brazil.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. Okay. Brazil. Share that story about the cab and...
Oh, my gosh. I really feel like I just have good karma.
Yes.
Because I had just arrived to Rio de Janeiro in 2014 for the World Cup, which, by the way, everyone, I went by myself. And I asked about 40 people if they wanted to come with me, family, friends.
You didn't ask me.
I didn't know.
I wasn't 140.
I didn't know you back then. If I did, I would have totally asked you. I would have totally asked you. But yeah, I literally asked 40 people, and everyone for their own reasons couldn't go. And I my mindset is fine. I'm going to do it anyways. And I, you know, went, and I just arrived to Rio, and everybody was like, oh, you're going to Brazil and you're a woman. Oh my God, it's so dangerous. They're going to kidnap you, you know, this, that. I'm like, what? Where? Really? Why? Is it that dangerous? Yes, it's so dangerous. Don't go to Brazil by yourself. When did you go? Oh no, I just saw it on the news. See what I mean? And I was like, who was that? And so then I went again. I was like, you know what? If I'm going to die, I don't want to die. But if I'm going to die, I'm going to die doing what I love. You know, I almost choked on a lifesaver in my apartment, like literally like the little like white lifesaver, because I was laughing watching some TV show. And imagine that headline, woman chokes on a lifesaver in her apartment. And she was discovered 20 days later. So sad. But what I'm saying, my point being, you can die doing what you love, or you can die, you know, a lot of people die with their dreams. They don't pursue their dreams because they're afraid to fail or they're afraid to whatever. I'm the opposite. I was afraid to be successful. I was never afraid to fail because I failed so many times. But I was like, you know what? At least I'm trying. At least I'm going for it. So that was my mentality. Travel too. You know what? I'm going to go. I'm going to be mindful. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen. So my family was like, oh, you're crazy. But I went. And probably the second day I got there, I wanted to see that Christ Redeemer in Rio. And I was talking to the taxi driver, and I asked to charge my phone on the way there. And he was so nice. He said, yes, of course. He didn't speak a lot of English or Spanish, Portuguese. And I didn't speak any Portuguese. So I spoke to him in Spanish. And thankfully, because they're so close to all the, you know, other Spanish speaking countries, he understood, and we were able to talk however we could. And he was telling me where to go, what to do, what not to do. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. And we had such a great conversation that I paid him and got off, and I went to the line. I got my ticket to Christ Redeemer. 2-hour wait, by the way, because it was World Cup time. So tourism was just crazy. And I was in line. I was talking to all the people and fans in front of me. And we're like, you know, talking about the games they're going to, et cetera. And I was like, oh, my game is, you know, in Salvador. And I was so excited. And I went to look what time, how much time had passed. Because it felt like, I don't know, an hour. And, you know, it was only like 10 minutes or something. And I was like, God, I wonder. I was like, oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. And then it just started clicking that I left my cell phone in the taxi in Rio de Janeiro, and it was my second day there. I didn't bring a laptop because I was like, didn't want to carry anything heavy with me. And I was like, oh my gosh. And my family, if they can't contact me, they're going to think I'm dead and this, that. And I was like, I just looked at this guy. I was like, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I wanted to cry, but I didn't want to get out of line. And I was like, probably about 5 minutes passed. And I was thinking, what am I going to do? Am I going to just buy a temporary cell phone, or what am I going to do? And this was years ago when internet cafes were still popular. Now it's, you know, everything is much better, I think, all over. But I really didn't know what I was going to do, like how I was going to be in contact with my family or friends abroad. And when I was thinking that, in the corner of my eye, I saw the taxi driver. Like, he was walking through the plaza, and I saw the cord. I saw a cord hanging down. Wow. So I couldn't see his hand, but I saw the cord hanging down. And I was like, oh my gosh. So I told the guys in the line, they were from Colombia. I was like, you know, why did me lugar? Like, save my spot. And they're like, okay. I was like, I'm going to go get my cell phone. And like, I ran to him. I mean, it looked like a romantic run, but it wasn't. I mean, it was, so I was running towards him, and I was like, I just gave him the biggest hug. Like, he was like, your cell phone. I was like, I'm looking everywhere for you. I'm like, thank you.
Wow.
Not only that, he wouldn't take any money. Like, I wanted to tip him. He wouldn't take it. And he genuinely just came back to bring me my cell phone. Granted, he could have done anything. Could have kept it, could have sold it. I was so, like, amazed. And wow. I think it was because of that conversation mm-hmm. that he did it.
Yeah.
And that same day, mm-hmm. 20 minutes later, no, 20 minutes later, that same day, I don't know how long later, in line, talking to all the fans, waiting for Christ the Redeemer, I ended up getting a ticket to a World Cup game, like, for the next day. And it was from and he didn't charge me for the ticket. I didn't know until after the game he wasn't going to charge me. He said he would, you know, ticket price was like $350, which was like, for a ticket to a World Cup game in Rio de Janeiro, they were selling for thousands of dollars, wow. right? And so the next day at the game, because his friend, he had a friend who canceled last minute. So he had just arrived to Rio like me, and he was like, oh, I was going to put it online later, but do you want it? And I was like, yes. But it was like, we were in line with hundreds of soccer fans. I was like, yes, please. Thank you. So like, that was just too many amazing things were happening.
Wow.
You know,
well, that's good. Hey, well, that you've shown that traveling by yourself and your woman is okay. You get people bring you cell phones that you left in the car, as well as you offered a World Cup ticket that you didn't think about. You receive favor for that stuff. So that's good. So, I mean, I can attest to some of the things when you travel to make sure, I mean, research the area that you're going. I mean, if you want to be safe, and that's for everybody. That's not
sure.
just for women, that's for anybody. I mean, research where you're going, research the local customs, the culture, things like that. Because I remember my family and I, we went to China some years ago.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, you read this book, What to Expect When You're in China, blah, blah, blah. And one thing that a lot, first of all, China is a communist country. Mm-hmm, okay.
Right.
So they don't see a lot of things on TV like we have access to every 200 something channels of anything, right? Anything goes. Well, over there, you know, they regulate what you can see. So guess what? They don't see a lot of black people over there. Okay. Let's just put it out there. They don't. So we were, and I'll just tell this quick story because I'm winding down here. We're on with Jeanette Seha, just so you know, travel expert, world international travel expert. But anyway, so we're in China and we're at Tiananmen Square.
Okay.
Now, Tiananmen Square, they say, is the largest outdoor mall or whatever. And I swear, they say it can hold up to like 500,000 people. Okay. So there's, then just look, you're looking as far as you can see, you see all these people. And we look around to see how many people we see to look like us. There was three. And it was me, my wife, and my daughter.
Wow. Were you like a celebrity? Did everyone want to take pictures?
Everybody went crazy.
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. It was, you know, for an 8-year-old, yeah. when my daughter was 8 at the time. It was frightening for her because she didn't understand what was going on. But for us, I mean, it wasn't like they were just kind of like in a frenzy. I mean, it was the wildest thing I've ever seen. It was just people were like shaking and screaming and like, you know, I don't know what they were saying, but by the way, they wanted to take pictures.
Right.
So from one end to the other end, I mean, we're walking and they're just taking pictures. They're looking. They're, you know, want to touch you. My daughter had braids in her hair. They wanted to touch her braids. They want to do all that stuff. I mean, throughout the whole trip, we were there 14 days.
Wow.
On the Great Wall, we're walking up. Amazing. People are coming up to you. Now, the Great Wall is not that big, first of all.
Really? I have not been to China yet.
There's so many people walking up and back, and it's not wide. And I mean, they'll push you out of the way. That's another thing. Their custom is that they will move you out of the way. I don't care how big you are. They will move you out of the way. Wow. And not in a disrespectful way, but that's just what they do. And you're just moving people out of the way on this thing. And the steps are not that big because, I mean, you know, my foot is a 12 and a half, 13. Mm-hmm. Well, the steps are maybe, I don't know, five inches or whatever. So it's, you know, it's interesting going up there. But all throughout when we're going up, they're coming down. They want to take pictures. They want to do this. I have this picture of, I don't know, about 10 Chinese girls and my daughter in the middle taking a picture. So I'm taking a picture of the lady that's taking a picture of them.
That is so funny.
Yeah, it is funny. So customs, but that's what bridges the world. Travel bridges the world. That's one thing Anthony Bourdain was, I think, in his own way, like you said, he was what he was. But it was one thing, he wasn't afraid to go anywhere. He was not afraid to talk to anybody. Right. He was not afraid to break bread with people. And that's regardless if that was in China, if that was in Africa, if that was in Mexico, wherever the heck it was, here in the United States, he was about people. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, he gets down with the locals.
Like, exactly.
They're drinking pulque. They're drinking tequila. I saw an episode where there was like a cow head in his soup or something. And like, he ate it. Like, he like ate whatever the locals ate. He drank whatever they drank. And he just did it. And like, never complained. He was never a diva.
Exactly.
He was so humble and so just.
Exactly. Oh, well, you keep doing what you do. I just have one other question for you. Maybe if I get to another one.
Sure.
Hotels. You stay in a lot of hotels?
I do.
You have a favorite hotel you stayed in? What country? It can be here. It can be anywhere.
Honestly, so many. Wow. How much time do we have?
You got 30 seconds. Give me one.
30 seconds. Okay. Well, I'm a fan of the Four Seasons. I am a fan of
high-end luxury. Thank you.
The Oberoi hotels in India, I will say, are top-notch. I mean, hands down, luxury to the extreme, and so, so nice. The hotels I stayed in Florida, they're part of the OPL collection. They were nice, too, and so friendly. There's just so many. I mean, I've probably stayed in hundreds and thousands of hotels.
Yes, you have. You mentioned them. That's fine. One other question. Now, people always want to know this. And this, you know, travel journalists or influencers or whatever, you know, you gave me the you know, what you thought about influencers. And I appreciate that. Thought leader. I like that.
Thought leader.
But you get paid for these trips, or trips are paid for? How does that work?
Well, you know, it's kind of like in the beginning, it differs. It depends, to be quite honest. I mean, and I have done press trips as well. But I think with the beginning, you know, now where I'm at, I transformed my brand into a business.
Okay.
So things are now getting paid for. Let's just say that. Mm-hmm. But when I started, it wasn't like that. Okay. And so
you pay your dues, so to speak.
Oh my gosh. The first year bootstrapped, paid for my travel conferences, my entrance, my hotels, everything. Again, my mindset is and was, I'm going to do it no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I wasn't able to cover, to speak or whatever, I will still go if it means that much to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to pivot my mindset from passion, fully focused, to also a business so that I could be sustainable and keep doing it, right? So I had to, and that happened over the years as well.
Very good. Now, just so you know, Jeanette is a brand. She's not just a person, but she is a brand. Jeanette Seha, and it's Jet Set with Jeanette.
Yes. Yes.
Jet Set with Jeanette.
Don't you love it?
Yes. I remember when she was just Jeanette Seha. So,
stop. I'm still Jeanette Seha. I'm still the goofy, friendly, super humble, and goofy person.
Yes, you are.
I will always be that way.
You are, I was going to say goofy, but definitely goofy. Humble. Definitely someone that I respect, and somebody I'm glad that you're my friend. In fact, I'm going to end it on this. She did a favor for me. Do you remember the favor you did for me?
Vision board?
Oh, God. My daughter.
Oh, yes. Yes.
My daughter didn't think it was anything big, but, you know, whatever. My daughter majored in Spanish and physical therapy in college. Now, my daughter graduated last May.
Yay.
And, you know, of course, I don't speak, we don't speak Spanish at home, not that much. And my Spanish is muy mal. So I asked Jeanette if she would take time out of her busy schedule to talk to my daughter in Spanish, because Jeanette speaks Spanish. My daughter, I just want to make sure my daughter spoke Spanish, because she doesn't speak it at home. So I've heard her talk in conversations, because she would do like a part of her thing, part of the class, where they had like a pen pal in another country, like a Spanish speaking country.
Yeah.
I remember hearing her talk, you know, but that was maybe a couple of years prior to that. So I just said, you know, Jeanette, can you, you know, if you don't mind. And she, they had a conversation. Oh, I'm sorry, I gotta wind it down. Sam, this has never happened. He's giving me the finger.
What? No, not that finger.
He's giving me the finger on the
time.
But anyway, let me wind this down. So, but anyway, Jeanette did talk to my daughter, and my daughter graduated last
year.
Yay! Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh!
But thank you so much for joining On Air with Russell Hotels. Thank you for being a guest.
Thank you, Russell.
And we'll see you again next week, same time, same channel, 1 o'clock. Take care. Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you for joining On Air with Russell of Hotels. Please tune in every Tuesday at 1 p.m. as we talk to other hospitality professionals. Your feedback is important. Email Russell at russell@russellofhotels.com with any questions or suggestions. Until next time, try not to be a person of success, rather become a person of value.